In this episode of the OrthoBullets podcast, we'll discuss the topic of leg compartment syndrome from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. Starting with a brief summary, leg compartment syndrome is a devastating lower extremity condition where the osteofascial compartment pressure rises to a level that decreases perfusion to the leg and may lead to irreversible muscle and neurovascular damage. Diagnosis is made with the presence of severe and progressive leg pain that worsens with passive ankle motion. Firmness and decreased compressibility of the compartments is often present, and needle compartment pressures are diagnostic in cases of inconclusive physical exam findings or in sedated patients. Treatment is usually with emergent fasciotomies of all four compartments. In this episode, we will discuss the epidemiology, etiology, relevant anatomy, clinical presentation, diagnostic studies, diagnosis, treatment options, and treatment techniques for leg compartment syndrome. Regarding the epidemiology of leg compartment syndrome may occur anywhere that skeletal muscle is surrounded by fascia, but most commonly occurs in the leg, forearm, hand, foot, thigh, buttocks, shoulder, and paraspinous muscles. With respect to the etiology, most cases of leg compartment syndrome are related to trauma, with 69% of cases being related to fractures. The others may include crush injuries, contusions, or gunshot wounds. Other etiologies may include tight casts, dressings, external wrappings, extravasation of IV infusions, burns, post-ischemic swelling, bleeding disorders, and arterial injury. The pathoanatomy of leg compartment syndrome results as a cascade of events that includes local trauma and soft tissue destruction, followed by bleeding and edema, which leads to increased interstitial pressures and vascular occlusion. This decreases venous outflow relative to arterial inflow and results in myoneural ischemia. The risk factors for developing this are diaphyseal fractures in patients that are young, with the highest prevalence being found in 12 to 19-year-olds. Some important anatomy to keep in mind are that there are four compartments of the leg: the anterior compartment, lateral compartment, deep posterior compartment, and superficial posterior compartment. The anterior compartment functions in dorsiflexion of the foot and ankle. This includes the muscles tibialis anterior, extensor hallucis longus, extensor digitorum longus, and peroneus tertius. The lateral compartment functions to plantar flex and evert the foot, and contains the muscles peroneus longus and peroneus brevis. Notably, isolated lateral compartment syndrome of the lower leg would only affect the superficial peroneal nerve. The deep posterior compartment functions to plantar flex and invert the foot. The deep posterior compartment contains the muscles tibialis posterior, flexor digitorum longus, and flexor hallucis longus. The superficial posterior compartment functions mainly to plantar flex the foot and ankle and contains the gastrocnemius, soleus, and plantaris. On clinical presentation, patients may present with symptoms of pain out of proportion to the clinical situation, which is usually the first symptom identified. It may be absent in cases of nerve damage, however, and pain is difficult to assess in a polytrauma patient and impossible to assess in a sedated patient. It is also notable that pain out of proportion may be difficult to assess in children who are unable to verbalize. On physical examination, patients present with pain with passive stretch, which is the most sensitive finding prior to the onset of ischemia, paresthesias and hypoesthesias, which are indicative of nerve ischemia in the affected compartment, paralysis, which is a late finding and full recovery is rare in the presence of paralysis, palpable swelling, and peripheral pulses being absent would be a late finding, and amputation is usually inevitable in this case. Regarding imaging findings, radiographs should be obtained to rule out fractures, and other studies such as compartment pressures may be used if necessary. Compartment pressure measurements are indicated for polytrauma patients, patients who are not alert or are unreliable, and in patients with inconclusive physical exam findings. Relative contraindications to compartment pressure measurements include unequivocally positive clinical exam findings, which should prompt emergent operative intervention without the need for compartment measurements. Regarding the technique for doing these compartment pressure measurements, these readings should be performed within 5 centimeters of a fracture site. It is important to note that low rates of inter-observer reliability have been noted with these measurements. To obtain compartment pressure measurements in the anterior compartment, the entry point should be 1 cm lateral to the anterior border of the tibia and within 5 cm of the fracture site if possible. The needle should be placed perpendicular to the skin. To obtain compartment pressures in the deep posterior compartment, the entry point should be just posterior to the medial border of the tibia, and the needle should be advanced perpendicular to the skin towards the fibula. To obtain lateral compartment measurements, the entry point should be just anterior to the posterior border of the fibula. And for the superficial posterior compartment, the entry point should be made within the middle of the calf, within approximately 5 cm of the fracture site if possible. Diagnosis of compartment syndrome is typically clinical and is based primarily on physical exam in patients with an intact mental status. Treatment can be divided into non-operative and operative intervention. Non-operative intervention with observation is indicated for patients whose diastolic differential pressure, or delta P, is greater than 30 millimeters of mercury. Observation is also indicated for patients whose presentation is not consistent with compartment syndrome. In patients with dressings, casts may be bivalved and circumferential dressings may be loosened. This is indicated as the initial treatment for swelling or pain that is not compartment syndrome. Splinting the ankle between neutral and resting plantar flexion of approximately 37 degrees can also decrease intracompartmental pressures. Non-operative approach may also include hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which works by increasing the oxygen diffusion gradient. Operative intervention with emergent fasciotomy of all four compartments is indicated with clinical presentation consistent with compartment syndrome, and compartment pressures within 30 millimeters of mercury of diastolic blood pressure or the delta P. Remember that intraoperatively, the diastolic blood pressure may be decreased from anesthesia, and therefore, the surgeon must compare intraoperative measurements to preoperative diastolic blood pressure. Alternatively, attempts may be made to restore systemic blood pressure prior to measurement. It is also important to note that emergent fasciotomy of all four compartments is contraindicated in missed compartment syndrome. Special considerations for intervention include in pediatrics and in hemophiliacs. In pediatrics, children are unable to verbalize their feeling, and if suspected, then perform compartment pressure measurements under sedation. And in hemophiliacs, factor VIII replacement should be given before measuring compartment pressures. Regarding the technique for emergent fasciotomy of all four compartments, a dual medial and lateral incision approach is taken. The approach is made with two 15 to 18 centimeter vertical incisions separated by at least an 8 centimeter skin bridge. An anterolateral incision and posteromedial incision are made. When making the anterolateral incision, the superficial peroneal nerve should be identified and protected. The fasciotomy of the anterior compartment should be performed 1 cm in front of the intermuscular septum, while the fasciotomy of the lateral compartment should be performed 1 cm behind the intermuscular septum. With respect to the posteromedial incision, the saphenous vein and nerve should be protected. Incision of the superficial posterior compartment may be made, and the soleal bridge should be detached from the back of the tibia to adequately decompress the deep posterior compartment. Postoperatively, dressing changes followed by daily primary closure or skin grafting at 3 to 7 days post-decompression may be performed. The pros of this technique are that it is easy to perform and provides excellent exposure, whereas the cons include that it requires 2 large incisions. Alternatively, a single lateral incision approach may be used. The single lateral incision may be made from the head of the fibula to the ankle along the line of the fibula. In this technique, the superficial peroneal nerve is identified, the anterior compartment fasciotomy is made 1 cm anterior to the intermuscular septum, the lateral compartment fasciotomy is made 1 cm posterior to the intramuscular septum, then attention is turned to the superficial posterior compartment, which is identified and fasciotomy is performed, and subsequently an interval between the superficial posterior and lateral compartments is identified to reach the deep posterior compartment by following the interosseous membrane from the posterior aspect of the fibula and releasing the compartment from this membrane. This puts the common peroneal nerve at risk with the proximal dissection, so care must be taken. The pro of this single lateral incision approach is that it provides a single incision, however the con is decreased exposure. Now that we've gotten a general overview of this topic, let's review a few questions to see how this material has been tested in the past. Question 1. A 25-year-old male sustains a comminuted middle third tibia and fibula fracture. He is splinted in the field, but on arrival to the emergency room, he complains of painful tightness around the leg and severe uncontrolled pain despite maximum dose narcotics. His pain is exacerbated when the toes and ankle are passively stretched in flexion and extension. What is the next most appropriate step? Answer 1. External fixation with serial Doppler examinations. Answer 2. Intramedullary nailing. 3. Open reduction internal fixation using plates and screws. 4. Immediate 2-compartment fasciotomies and external fixation. Or 5. Immediate 4-compartment fasciotomies and external fixation. The correct answer is 5. Immediate 4-compartment fasciotomies and external fixation. This patient has clinical symptoms and signs of leg compartment syndrome and should undergo immediate fasciotomies of all 4 leg compartments followed by external fixation for fracture stabilization. Tibial fractures are among the most common reasons for compartment syndromes of the leg. A clinical assessment is key in the diagnosis of acute compartment syndrome. If there is uncertainty, intracompartmental pressure measurements have been advocated to help confirm the diagnosis. An absolute compartment pressure greater than 30 millimeters of mercury or a difference in diastolic blood pressure and compartment pressure, otherwise known as the delta P, of less than 30 millimeters of mercury may help to confirm the necessity for fasciotomy. McQueen et al. Published a report of 25 patients with tibial diaphyseal fractures which had been complicated by an acute compartment syndrome. They reported significant differences in any sequelae of acute compartment syndrome between patients who underwent compartment pressure monitoring and those who had not. They recommended that all patients with tibial fractures should have continuous compartment pressure monitoring to minimize the incidence of acute compartment syndrome. Mawini et al. Reported on 3 cases of tibial compartment syndrome after closed intramedullary nailing of the tibia. They reported that the only predisposing factor for the development of compartment syndrome were the surgery and the fracture itself. They concluded that tibial compartment syndrome is a relatively rare but significant complication of tibial nailing. Regarding the incorrect answers, answers 1, 2, 3, and 4 are incorrect as this patient presents with signs of acute compartment syndrome and should undergo immediate 4-compartment fasciotomy. Question 2. A 35-year-old female presents to the emergency room after a motor vehicle collision where her leg was pinned under the car for 30 minutes. On physical examination, the leg is tense, painful, and pale, and radiographs reveal a diaphyseal tibia-fibula fracture. Which of the following is the most accurate way to diagnose compartment syndrome? Is it answer 1, surgeon's palpation of the leg compartments? 2, paresthesias in the foot? 3, diastolic blood pressure minus intracompartmental pressure is less than 30 millimeters of mercury? 4, diastolic blood pressure minus intracompartmental pressure is greater than 30 millimeters of mercury? Or 5, intracompartmental pressure measurement of 25 millimeters of mercury. The correct answer is 3. Diastolic blood pressure minus intracompartmental pressure is less than 30 millimeters of mercury. This clinical picture is consistent with compartment syndrome. The most accurate way to make the diagnosis is to measure the difference between the diastolic blood pressure and intracompartmental pressure, or delta P. In a prospective study of 116 patients with tibial diaphyseal fractures, McQueen et al. Found that the use of a differential pressure of 30 millimeters of mercury as a threshold for fasciotomy led to no missed cases of acute compartment syndrome. They recommended that a fasciotomy should be performed if the differential pressure drops to under 30 millimeters of mercury. A study by Kikar et al. Found that the intraoperative diastolic blood pressure is significantly lower than the preoperative diastolic blood pressure in patient monitoring undergoing IM nailing for tibia shaft fractures. Therefore, they emphasize that the surgeon should recognize that the intraoperative delta P may be lower than the delta P once the patient is awakened in deciding whether to perform a fasciotomy versus awaken the patient and perform serial examinations and/or compartment pressure measurements. An absolute intracompartmental value of greater than 30 to 45 millimeters of mercury can also be used to make the diagnosis of compartment syndrome, but is more controversial than the delta P according to Kakar and Amendola. Last question. A 32-year-old male sustains a diaphyseal tibia-fibula fracture. His blood pressure preoperatively was 132 over 84. After closed reduction and placement of an intramedullary nail, his intraoperative leg compartment pressures are measured, with the highest being 28 millimeters of mercury. His blood pressure at this time is 84 over 57. What is the next most appropriate step? Is it 1. Immediate four-compartment fasciotomy, 2. Fasciotomy of the highest compartments, 3. Removal of the nail and placement of an external fixator, 4. Repeat evaluation in the recovery room, or 5. Addition of pressors to anesthesia. The correct answer is 4. Repeat evaluation in the recovery room. This patient presents with a mildly comminuted tibia fracture, which is a fracture highly associated with compartment syndrome. However, in this scenario, the delta P, or the difference between the compartmental pressures and the diastolic pressure, is greater than 30 preoperatively, with a decrease to less than 30 intraoperatively due to the hypotension associated with anesthesia. The article by Kakar et al. Notes that the delta P may be spuriously low intraoperatively and with tibial nailing. It is safe to assume the delta P will return to a higher level postoperatively. They recommended continued monitoring in the postoperative period with clinical examination and measurements as needed. The article by McQueen showed that the delta P is more important than absolute pressures, as an absolute threshold of 30 millimeters of mercury would have led to unnecessary fasciotomies in 43% of their cohort. That is all for this review about leg compartment syndrome. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or the mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value so far from the OrthoBullets podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you are not already, please be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.